Monitor now invites you to Meet the Press, America's press conference of the year, winner of every major award in its field. Today's guest on Meet the Press will be India's ambassador to the United States, Mr. B.K. Nehru. Before his present appointment, Mr. Nehru was India's Commissioner General for Economic Affairs. We will bring you today's program in a moment.
This is Gene Rayburn, one of your hosts on Weekend Monitor, introducing two more Monitor regulars, Woodman and Rich.
It's going to be an exciting day.
Excuse me, gentlemen. Pardon me. Let me through here.
Listen, we're busy, whoever you are.
I know you're busy.
Yes.
You're not busy enough for this. I have been working 8 years on this contest.
Well, listen, we're not interested.
Monitor is going to have a contest.
But we don't run.
Here's how it works. Drive your new car
to
your nearest supermarket and leave it there.
Nearest supermarket.
First of all, you have to load it up with 14 portable television sets.
Yes.
100 radio transistors.
100,
earplugs.
Yes. Right, mm-hmm.
And 1,500 ballpoint pens. And then you take your new car and drive all that over to the nearest supermarket and leave it there.
And this is how you enter the contest?
And wait. Wait for it, folks.
Well, what happens? What do I get if I win?
We complete the sentence of your choice in 25 words or less.
Woodman and Rich invite you to laugh with them on Monitor every weekend on this NBC station.
Here is a wonderful opportunity for young men and women who are concerned about America's future and their own future as well. If you're a college graduate, man or woman, get as much information as possible about the United States Air Force Officer Training Program. Your local Air Force recruiter will be happy to give you full information on the many opportunities available in the Officer Training Program. Visit or telephone your Air Force recruiter now. There's a place for tomorrow's leaders on the aerospace team, the United States Air Force. Now, Monitor invites you to Meet the Press. Today's guest, India's ambassador to the United States, Mr. B.K. Nehru. Our panel consists of Lauren Spivak, producer of Meet the Press, Peter Lissagor, the Chicago Daily News, John Hightower, Associated Press, and Ellie Abel, NBC News. Ned Brooks is our moderator.
Our guest today on Meet the Press is India's ambassador to the United States, Mr. B.K. Nehru. Before his present appointment, Ambassador Nehru was India's Commissioner General for Economic Affairs and Chief Negotiator for Economic Aid for India. He represented his country at the United Nations from 1949 to 1952. We'll start the questions now with Lawrence E. Spivak, permanent member of the Meet the Press panel.
Mr. Nehru, India has tried over the years to be a friend of Communist China. How, in view of that, do you explain this attack on India? What is behind it?
Mr. Spivak, it's difficult to tell. I wish I knew all the chancelleries of the world and all the foreign officers are trying to find out what's behind it, so that I can only give you a personal view, which is probably as valid as your own might be. It seems to me that the Chinese have three or four objectives, or three or four reasons, shall I say. One is a sort of desire for revenge for our actions in Tibet, in regard to Tibet in 1959. We've given asylum to the Dalai Lama. We have given refuge to a very large number or substantial number of Tibetan refugees. And this has been regarded as a kind of intervention by the Chinese in their affairs. Secondly, I think they want a frontier which is strategically of advantage to them in the sense that they want it south of the high mountains, south of the Himalayas, so that at any future time, when the time is ripe, they can begin their advances into the country once again. Thirdly, I think they want to make certain, or they want to make obvious to the other countries of Asia, that they are the great power in Asia and not India. And this they can demonstrate by inflicting on us a military defeat. But fourthly, and most importantly, I think that this is an attempt to destroy the Indian way of life, because the Indian way of life, namely development through freedom and through in democracy, was achieving a degree of success which, if it went on, would have convinced or helped other people to the concept that this was the way to develop. After all, this is a problem before the underdeveloped countries of the world. China and India have adopted different systems of development. Ours was being a little more successful, I think, than they desired, and the best way to destroy it is to force us to divert our resources, very limited resources, to defense rather than to development.
Well, do you think also that this may be an important step towards communizing the rest of Asia?
Well, it's difficult to say, Mr. Spivak. If they can destroy the Indian system, they don't have forcibly to communize India. India sort of, shall we say, winds down. And if even India winds down with the resources in men and that we have, and cannot make a success of the democratic system, then it's not very encouraging to the others in Southeast Asia to attempt what we've been attempting to do.
Well, are you saying then that they don't even have to conquer India, that all they have to do is make you fight and impoverish you to accomplish their goal?
They don't have to conquer India, no. No, they don't have to conquer India. We are in India subject to two threats. We've always been subject to two threats to our survival. One is the threat from external aggression, which is the one we are now facing. But the other and the more important threat has always been the threat from internal subversion or the destruction of the Indian social and political system through a collapse of the economy, or rather not through a collapse of the economy, but through a failure of the economy to develop at a fast enough rate and therefore to increase the discontent that exists. All that you have to do to destroy a free system in a poor society is to stop development.
We'll continue the questions now with Mr. Hightower.
Mr. Ambassador, there was a coincidence in timing of the Chinese attack on India in its present phase and the development of the Cuban crisis. Do you think there was a coincidence in planning? Was this deliberate?
Mr. Hightower, I have no means of knowing. We have no evidence that there was any connection between the two. They took place at the same time, but we just don't know.
I've heard a speculation that perhaps the Chinese communists felt that if the Soviets were going to be tied up in an adventure in Cuba, they might be able to bring more pressure on India without United States interference, which raises the question of the adequacy of American aid in the circumstances as they have developed. How has it been?
Well, Mr. Hightower, as to the adequacy of American aid, what's gone so far has been small arms and ammunition, things of that kind, which we needed immediately. We are talking, and new lists are being submitted to the United States, as well as to Britain and Canada, about the weapons and equipment that we want. There has been no refusal of any kind in regard to the weapons that we want.
Could you give us some idea, sir, of the nature of future aid which is needed? The things that went were very small. Do you need to get into much heavier materiel, such as tanks, big guns, and so on?
Mr. Hightower, I can't say at present. What's happening is that there is a committee sitting in India, in Delhi, trying to draw up lists of the items that we will want. Obviously, this depends on a view of how long the war will last, where it will be fought, what we have, what we are fit to use, etc., etc. So that at this moment, one couldn't give any idea of the kind of equipment we'll need.
There was a member of the British Parliament who returned to England within the last few days who was quoted in news dispatches as saying he had learned in Delhi an estimate that the war would last perhaps 5 to 10 years. Would you think this was reasonable?
Well, I would say that the war would last a long time, because the war cannot end till we have dislodged the Chinese from where they are. The Chinese are not going to go back through diplomatic activity, and to dislodge them is going to take a very major national effort.
Mr. Lissagore.
Mr. Ambassador, in the past, Prime Minister Nehru has seemed to believe that if the Chinese misbehaved, the Russians would exercise some kind of restraint on them. Does your government now believe that the Russians are in a position to apply any restraints to the Chinese communists today?
I can't say what my government believes, Mr. Lissagore, but the situation requires to be watched to see how it's going to develop. As you've seen, the Russians have not so far refused to honor their contracts with us in regard to to economic aid or in regard to the arms purchases that we had made. What they are doing with the Chinese, I just don't know.
Now, do you mean to say that the Russians are continuing their aid to India at this time?
Oh, yes.
Does that include the MiG jet fighters, which you had on order, I believe, about
right.
12 of them? Have you received those yet?
No, the date for delivery is sometime in December, and we've had no indication so far that they will not be supplied.
Now, on your relations with Russia today, Mr. Ambassador, your new defense minister has said that communist blood is thicker than peaceful coexistence water, I believe. Can you tell us how the Indian government can continue to practice non-alignment now in view of these present circumstances? And is there such a thing as practicing a limited amount of non-alignment?
Mr. Lissagore, non-alignment consists basically, at least as we define it, in a nation making up its own mind on international issues, whether they are issues of peace or of war. And this mind is naturally made up in the light of that nation's self-interest, as modified by the interest of the world, if one is a good citizen of the world, or the nation is a good member state of the United Nations, and one acts accordingly. Now, if you analyze this concept, really, you'll find that most nations, all nations, including those who are so-called members of blocs, are non-aligned because we are all acting according to our own view of the situation. That we are fighting one communist power and fighting it with all our strength does not mean that we've given up the right or intend to give up the right to take a view of world affairs on our own, in our own way.
Mr. Abel.
Mr. Ambassador, your prime minister might be regarded as Mr. Non-Alignment in the modern world. Why do you suppose his disciples in so many other non-aligned countries, I'm thinking of Tito and Nasser and Sukarno and so forth, have not rallied round in this rather difficult moment for you? Is it simple fear of China, or is there something about the doctrine of non-alignment that...
Well, Mr. Abel, I think it's the doctrine of non-alignment. The non-aligned powers do not form and have never formed a bloc for the simple reason that the objection of at least India to the formation of a non-aligned bloc is that that makes us aligned with somebody else. And so far as Nasser and Tito and other people are concerned, it's true that some of them are attempting a mediation. I don't know how it's going and where it's going, but it's very possible that if one wants to be a mediator, it's always wise not to come out very strongly on either side, no matter how strongly you may feel.
Some of them seem to have gone a little beyond that. Mr. Nkrumah, for example, seems to have protested to the British their supply of arms to you.
Yes, originally he did, but I think Mr. Nkrumah has somewhat changed his stance.
Do you, Mr. Ambassador, regard this campaign in the North as one of limited objectives, or is this the total war the Prime Minister talked about today?
This is not a war of limited objectives. In my answer to Mr. Spivak, what I'd said was, and what I feel is, that the objectives of China are unlimited. What their exact objectives are at this present moment, territorially, it's difficult to say. One can only say that they'll move on as far as they can come in, depending on what resistance we put in. As far as we are concerned, our objectives are in a sense limited, and these are to throw the Chinese back where they came from, the other side of the Himalayas where they belong. We have no intention of carrying the war into China.
How does one go about fighting a major conflict, Mr. Ambassador, when I gather 2/3 to 3/4 of your armed forces are arrayed against another possible enemy, Pakistan?
It's very difficult and it's very unfortunate. And I wish we could withdraw those troops and put them to fight against the Chinese.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Nehru, I think you said a minute ago that you've had no indication that the Soviet Union will not supply the MiGs that they promised you. Have you had any assurance, though, that they will supply them?
Well, a contract exists, Mr. Spivak, and as every other contract is being honored, all the deliveries are being made on time, so we have no reason to believe that this particular one, the MiG one, will not be honored.
Well, am I to understand that you are getting some supplies, parts, yes, and things of that,
yes,
kind from the Soviet Union,
yes,
now?
Yes, yes, yes.
I think, Mr. Ambassador, you requested assistance from a great many other countries in the world besides the United States and Canada and Britain. Can you tell us what response you've had from them? Have any of them responded?
In the matter of material support, we are getting some material support in addition to these three countries you've named, from France and Germany.
Anybody else?
Well, I don't. There's nobody else in a position to supply armament these days. Not really. Not in any great.
Now, I'd like you to answer this question. Because of your non-alignment position, there are a great many people in the United States today who are asking this question: why, since India is non-aligned and hasn't always been, in its words at least, friendly to the United States, I think thinking mostly of Mr. Krishnamenon, why should the United States now give large-scale military aid to India? Would you answer that first?
I'll try to. As far as the friendliness of India to the United States is concerned, I honestly don't think it can be doubted. There have been occasions, certainly, where we've differed. And there have been other occasions where possibly our verbal expression of our views has not been altogether what it might have been. As to why the United States should aid India, this depends entirely on what the aims and objectives of the United States are in regard to the kind of world it wants to see. The mere fact that one country says that it is an ally and another country says that it is a friend, I don't think is particularly important. What is important is to see how those countries act, what those countries stand for, and whether the actions of those countries and the ideals of those countries fit in with the ideals and the aims and objectives of the United States. Now, I assume that what the United States wants in the world is a world of freedom and of democracy. And if that is what we want too, and that is not only something we want, but something we practice. And therefore, it seems to me that if I were an American, I would say it would be desirable to help the maintenance of that freedom.
Mr. Hightower.
When one turns the proposition around, Mr. Nehru, it then becomes difficult to make much sense out of the doctrine of non-alignment as it's projected into the present situation, in that if freedom and democracy are the real issues here, it would seem that many of the countries which still hold aloof and which have been in some degree critical of India's response to the attack or the help given to India should, in their own interest, drop non-alignment in favor of support. What I'm trying to get at is, where does the logic lead us in this with respect to the other countries which continue neutrality?
I don't think I fully followed your question, Mr. Hightower. Insofar as I have, what you're trying to say is that the other non-aligned countries, if they also favor freedom and democracy, should help India.
Yes, that's...
I would accept that, certainly.
Now, this leads to another question, which has interested me quite a lot. Why has India, a great supporter of the United Nations, not gone into the United Nations and asked for diplomatic action on a multilateral basis?
Well, the answer to that is very simple. We can go to the United Nations to complain about somebody who's there. The Red Chinese aren't there. And it doesn't make any sense to bring a complaint against the Red Chinese when they just aren't there.
May I ask one other question, sir? And this is the matter whether it might be desirable at some point, insofar as you can foresee the future, to ask for military help, not just assistance in arms, but military help on a multilateral basis.
That's looking too far into the future, Mr. Hightower. I just don't know. One doesn't know how the war will develop, how far it will go on, and what we'll need. So we'll have to leave that till, for events to
Your
show.
Your forces, then, you feel adequate for the moment?
The forces are adequate for the moment. The equipment is not. That's why we want more equipment.
Mr. Lissagor.
Mr. Ambassador, I'd like to get you back to Pakistan for a moment. Is it not possible for India and Pakistan to arrange a truce of some kind over Kashmir at this juncture when you are said to be engaged in a kind of total war so that you can free those Indian soldiers facing the Pakistani soldiers at Kashmir to fight the Chinese?
Of course it is, and when you say about truce, or when you talk about a truce, the situation is that there is in Kashmir a ceasefire line. There's been a ceasefire line for the last 14 years. There's been no fighting there. We have said very clearly over and over again that we do not intend to cross the ceasefire line, so that Pakistan should have no fear of our invading any part of the territory they hold. This has been said innumerable times and repeated all over again. If we could have a similar assurance from Pakistan that while we are engaged in the war with China, there will be no military diversion on the India-Pakistan frontiers, then we would be very happy, and we want to very much, to take these groups away to fight the Chinese.
Now, as I understand it, Mr. Ambassador, the United States got an assurance from India that the equipment and arms that are going there now will not be used in any kind of action against Pakistan.
That's right.
Now, wouldn't it be possible for the United States to get a similar assurance from Pakistan which would make you feel all right about it and therefore you could release your troops? Now, why is that not possible?
Well, I suppose it is possible, but it just hasn't been done yet.
Would you accept that kind of assurance, and would you then move your troops into...
I think what we would like is an assurance from Pakistan, a very simple assurance from Pakistan, that while we are engaged in fighting the Chinese, they will not use either their arms or American arms or any arms to fight us, to open another front.
Mr. Ambassador, earlier in answer to a question, you said you were fighting one communist power, separating that power from other communist power. Do you regard this action by the Chinese communists as a Chinese nationalism on the rampage or as a communist with all that we know about it and its expansionist tendencies in action?
Well, I'd say a little of both. There is obviously Chinese nationalism. This has been reinforced by the communist religion. The Chinese communists are latter-day converts to communism, and therefore all the scriptures are obeyed by them much more vigorously than they are by the older communists.
Mr. Abel.
Isn't it true, Mr. Ambassador, that one reason your government has not gone to the UN with this issue was that you had reason to believe the Soviet Union would then be forced to take the Chinese side of the argument and sacrifice its neutrality?
This may have been, but I have not been informed of it, Mr. Abel.
Glad that you haven't denied it at any rate.
We have about 2 minutes, gentlemen. Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Barrow, this may be a difficult one for you to answer, but there's a great deal of interest in this country as to whether or not Mr. Krishnamenon may come back to the UN at any time in the future. Can you tell us whether there's any possibility of that?
I can't. How can I? It's for the Prime Minister to appoint leaders of delegations to the United Nations. He isn't there now.
Knowing the state of public opinion here, this too may be difficult for you. Do you think he should come back?
Now, this is a question that an ambassador should not answer.
Mr. Abel.
Ambassador, we've talked about exchanges of temporary assurances that you wouldn't take armed action against Pakistan and vice versa. President Ayub, in an interview today in the Sunday Times of London, goes a little farther. He says he's ready to negotiate a Kashmir settlement now on any reasonable or honorable terms. All he wants to do is talk. Is your government prepared to talk with him?
Mr. Abel, our government has been prepared to talk with him for always. In fact, the technical situation today is that there is an outstanding invitation to President Ayub from the Prime Minister of India to come and talk about Kashmir. Mr. Ayub has not so far accepted that invitation.
Mr. Lissigore.
Mr. Nehru, one of the surprising things about this war with the Chinese communists is why there has been no bombing. They have not chosen to use any air action, and nor has India. Why is this?
Well, I suppose if there were air bombing, we would very rapidly end up in a situation that would bring a third world war very, 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 very near. I mean, this would mean our retaliation and their further retaliation. It means a very rapid escalation of the war.
Mr. Ambassador, I'm very sorry to have to interrupt, but I see that our time is up. Thank you very much, Ambassador Nehru, for being with us.
Thank you, Ned Brooks. In just a moment, we'll tell you how you can get a copy of this week's Meet the Press interview.
This is Radio Moscow.
The identification of Radio Moscow, comparable to our own trademark, the NBC Chimes. This is Frank McGee in the NBC newsroom in New York. Overseas radio stations are familiar here because we are in daily contact with correspondents around the world. The result? NBC News is uniquely equipped to bring you responsible, authoritative interpretations of the news as it happens, from where it happens.
Have you seen the poster with the picture of a little boy pushing a toy car across a tabletop? That's David Jordalin of Worcester, Massachusetts. He's the poster boy of this year's fundraising campaign of the National Association for Retarded Children. David is a pretty good example of their slogan, "Retarded children can be helped." Several years ago, his mother was told that David would never be able to read, but today he's learning. He knows almost 50 words. Why? Because David was able to receive special care and training from experienced people who knew how to help him. But not all mentally retarded children are as fortunate as David. There just aren't enough facilities, not enough trained people to help the 126,000 people born every year who are destined to become mentally retarded. Now's the time for you, me, all of us, to do something about it. Let's all give to our local unit of the National Association for Retarded Children, so more retarded children can be helped. Now, more details on Meet the Press. Today's guest was India's ambassador to the United States, Mr. B.K. Nehru, and the panel consisted of Lauren Spivak, producer of Meet the Press, Peter Lissigore of the Chicago Daily News, John Hightower of the Associated Press, and Ellie Abel of NBC News. For a printed copy of today's Meet the Press interview, send 10 cents in coin and a stamped self-addressed envelope to Merkle Press, M-E-R-K-L-E, Merkle Press, 809 Channing Street, Northeast, Washington, D.C. 10 cents in coin and a stamped self-addressed envelope to Merkle Press, M-E-R-K-L-E, Merkle Press, 809 Channing Street, Northeast, Washington, D.C. Meet the Press will be heard again next week at this same time. This program was pre-recorded. Driving this weekend, let Monitor pave the way to happier motoring on NBC Radio.